Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush. Crush through judgment.
Why are you so judgy, man?
I know.
Yeah. I'm kidding. You're not. It's just the idea of being of reviewing movies.
Film criticism?
It's so inherently dickish, you know?
You think?
But, I don't know. I like it, but we talked about this in the last episode, the poll about awards and, you know, judging art and stuff and all that.
It's, yeah, but you know what? I think they're – I love legit film criticism and grew up reading Roger Ebert and, you know, Maslin and mm-hmm. – and, Travers and mm-hmm. some of those are still around.
Who no, you're right. It's good. It's good writing. I'm joking, really. We're going to proceed to do the very thing I'm talking about.
You know who I want to have on the show is Paul Scheer's co-host on Unspooled, Amy Nichols.
Yeah.
She's great.
Uh-huh. I need to listen to that. I'm a really big fan of How Did This Get Made? I need to check out them talking about actual good movies.
Yeah, man. Unspooled is really good. I'm a huge fan, and she's just lovely and wonderful. And I'm sure I'll be able to hook that up. I don't want to do it remotely. I want to go out and meet face-to-face because those are the best interviews, everybody. So this week, we are going to be reviewing Ant-Man and the Wasp, a movie that Noel and I each saw. And this was directed by Peyton Reed, who I believe also did the first Ant-Man, starring Paul Rudd as Ant-Man and Evangeline Lilly, who I still have a crush on after all these years.
She looks like exactly the same,
too. She looks exactly the same.
It's crazy.
She is the Wasp. And Michael Pena, the great Walton Goggins, also from Georgia, is in this movie. The wonderful Bobby Cannavale and Judy Greer. And, of course, T.I. is in this movie. Atlanta's own.
That's right. He works in the office, or in the security.
Yeah, he's like Michael Pena's cohort, one
That's
of
right.
the three guys.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, other roles, very significant in this film, at least, Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas, of course, and as Pym, and Lawrence Fishburne makes an appearance as well. So heavy hitter cast for Ant-Man and the Wasp. I saw the original Ant-Man. I liked it. And I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp even more, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
More?
I think so.
It definitely, like, took some of the things that were cool about the first one and just sort of, like, doubled down on
uh-huh.
them. There's a lot more stuff in the, what do you call it, the microverse or whatever, or the little, you know, what do they call that?
You mean the quantum realm?
The quantum realm.
Yes.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank
yes.
you. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in there,
uh-huh.
and that was some of the stuff I really thought was visually
sure.
awesome from the first one. And they managed to really make it an interesting part of the story.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? Here's my deal with Ant-Man and these sort of it's not a slag to call it a second-tier Marvel movie, but it's not the Avengers. But like Thor Ragnarok and Ant-Man and these sort of smaller Marvel movies, if you can call them that, I love. I think they're great. Is Ant-Man and the Wasp the best movie of the summer? No, but to me it was a lot of fun. I would go see any of these Marvel movies and generally enjoy them all to varying degrees. And Ant-Man is certainly no exception.
I had taken my kid to see the first one when it came out, and we saw this one together. And that kind of colored my viewing of it because it is kind of – it's not a kid's movie, but it has this sort of goofball, over-the-top energy to it that really works for a kid. Like,
yeah.
She really, really liked it. And the beginning of it, just – I don't know how much we want to go into the plot, but, like, he is under house arrest.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going
because
crazy.
Because of
the past events. He's going crazy in his house. He's got all these, like, ways to, like, do fun stuff with his kid without leaving the house. So he's built this whole, like, cardboard world where, like, they're crawling through, like doing some kind of heist or something, because he's obviously a professional thief. And then there's a whole scene where, like, they get shot out onto a staircase that he's built, like, a slide onto.
So cool.
It's really cute. It reminded me of, like, 90s, like, kind of Robin Williams-y
uh-huh.
kind of vibes.
Yeah.
You know, the whole family, fun, warm
kind
of, like, you know, creative dad thing. I don't know. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I did too, man. It's such a likable movie. Paul Rudd is such a likable guy, generally. That contraption that they built is just so much fun. The scenes with Bobby Cannavale and Judy Greer as his ex-wife and her new husband, it really is sort of a bends the trope of the ex-wife and new husband, where it's usually like a strained relationship or something. And they just adore Paul Rudd's character in this movie. And it's really funny when they see each other. They're all just so loving. And Bobby Cannavale is always trying to get a hug.
Yeah. And he's only in it a few times.
He's great, though.
Yeah, no, he's really great. Michael Pena is hilarious.
He's just so motor mouth and like always talking, always talking.
Oh, exactly. That's sort of his character. But there's a part that really plays up to that beautifully where he gets injected with a truth serum. And the guy who's injecting it keeps saying, he's like, is this the truth serum? He's like, there's no such thing as truth serum. And he's like, but this is truth serum. He's like, no. And he gives this like overly drawn out, like scientific explanation of what it's about to do. And it's basically exactly what a truth serum sounds like.
Yeah.
But in that scene, he's asking him what the whereabouts of Ant-Man are, and he sort of like, he says, where is he? And he goes into this very like dramatic, long-winded thing about where he is mentally, kind of. And part of it involves the story about his childhood or his like grandmother and a restaurant of some kind had with a jukebox that has only Morrissey songs
in it. Oh,
and
yeah, that's
a thing in the Latino community.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Morrissey is like this huge figure. And I didn't know that.
I lived in LA for the first time and I was like, I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
And he says in the movie, he says, I think he just perfectly encompasses our melancholy spirit or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. He calls him Maz.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
And the ringtone for Pena's character is Every Day's Like Sunday.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Which is awesome.
Wasn't there another Smith's ringtone in it? Or was it just the same one over and over?
I think that's the only one.
Oh, okay.
It's always him.
Yeah, I can remember. Nice little.
And that's Morrissey solo, though, dog. Not Smith's canon.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was that on his first solo record?
I think so.
Oh, no.
Every day's like Sunday in a seaside town.
It is Morrissey. You're right.
Yeah.
I love Morrissey.
Yeah, he's my spirit animal right now. I'm Morrissey as hell right now.
That was on Viva 8, 1988's Viva 8. Great, great record. So the basic premise of this movie is essentially Hank Pym, who is Michael Douglas, his wife has been disappeared and I guess feared dead for many, many years. And I believe they find out she is somewhere in the quantum realm and believe they can get her back because Ant-Man's character has now gone into the quantum realm and he had this dream about them being together. And so this sort of brings everyone back together because Ant-Man is – Scott is estranged from Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas at the beginning.
And Michelle Pfeiffer was there?
Yeah, well, she was the wife.
She's the wife.
Age appropriate for a change. Michael Douglas
really?
Is not with a 28-year-old.
I know. And do you notice the subtle thing they do with the Ant-Man movies where when it's flashbacks of Pym being younger, they use CGI to make him look younger?
Yeah, it's pretty well done now.
It's pretty well done.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And that stuff, like in the – I didn't even see it, but I saw enough of the bits and pieces from the Tron sequel to know that the Jeff Bridges job did not look so great.
Not so good.
No, but this looks really believable. Like, I find myself looking at it and be like, man, they're really catching up.
Well, because it can have that uncanny valley feel where it's just like, this is making me really uncomfortable.
Right, not
you
quite
know?
Right.
No. So Pym, he's got some pretty crazy research that he's done in order to get back into the quantum realm.
Yes.
To rescue his wife, because in the very first scene, it's the flashback of when they're going to fight the Russians or someone's launching a missile and, you know, they have to, you know, they're Ant-Man and the Wasp at that point and his wife gets stuck in the quantum realm.
Right.
Have you said all this already?
Well, I didn't say how she got stuck.
Okay.
But yeah.
She gets stuck in the quantum realm because she has to break through the missile casing in order to disarm the bomb. And the only way she can do that is by shrinking.
Sacrificing herself,
shrinking to that quantum level and being able to go in between the molecules of the missile.
Right,
casing.
Like knowing she can't come back.
Knowing she can't come back.
And so is the deal then that I believe the deal is that technology catches up and he finally figures out how to bring someone out of the quantum realm.
He figures it out. And also there's this synchronicity between Scott and her, because he's having like visions where he's in her body or she's in his body, or they're like body swapping.
There's a funny scene.
Really great scene where that's played for laughs.
Yeah.
But pretty simple story. And then there's a pretty simple villain that is like trying to just get the technology. So it's a very straightforward movie, which I kind of liked. And it has some really fun set pieces and some, you know, Scott, you know, Ant-Man gets to get really big and swim around at Fisherman's Wharf, which is really fun.
That was great.
Know?
I liked it when he was
big.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, you know, would get caught in between. There's that funny sequence where he's like a foot and a half tall and can't get as small as he needs or as big as he needs.
That's right.
Because things are, I believe the suit is malfunctioning because he lost, supposedly, the original suit.
Yeah, and then this is the new suit, but it's jacked up. It's like a
beta.
Prototype or something like that.
Yeah.
And so when he can only grow to about a certain middle height, he has to pretend to be like a school kid.
it is
quite funny. It reminds me of the scene in Deadpool 2. Have you seen Deadpool 2?
I still haven't seen that, man. I need to.
Oh, there's a hilarious scene in that where because all they'll do with Deadpool is he can get his limbs blown off and they grow back, but it takes time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like baby limbs for a little while. So there's one part where he's like got tiny legs and like a normal sized dong. And everyone's just looking at him like, and he's just like, what? It's really funny.
Oh, man. I can't believe I haven't seen that one yet because I love that first Deadpool. And the other thing I liked about this was, and part of the fun of Ant-Man is all the different ways you can play with size. And in this one there, the technology had grown such that with remote controls, you can shrink all kinds of things. And one of the kind of plot points was they could shrink their lab to the point where it was like a rollerboard suitcase.
Yep.
And, you know, this building like had everything in it.
Yeah.
Like you could shrink the lab down and then all of a sudden that could be stolen and thrown in the back of a car.
Yeah. I had some problems with that though.
Did you?
Well, only because like they just happened to find all these vacant lots where they can grow a full fucking building, you know, to full size.
I'm with you
and
there.
And no one notices and like, no one like notices when it just shrinks and disappears.
Oh, Noel. Come on. You got to get over that.
All right. Well, I mean, I got to gripe about something. I like the movie. The thing I like, too, was the cars. They get to play with cars in this one a lot, which is fun. And it keeps them in, like, one of those Hot Wheels cases.
Yeah,
you know,
that was
when
cool.
You were a kid and you kept it, like, in this tire-shaped little case.
And you could get any car and have that car.
Yeah, and I thought that was a lot of fun. It was a fun device.
Yeah, the way they played with all the things that you could now shrink was definitely a lot of fun. And I love the fact that this movie is about being able to be shrunk to the quantum realm and your problem is vacant lots.
You're right, Chuck. I'm going to take a long, hard look at myself.
Oh, that's funny, though. And then, you know, it ends with a, you know, it's just sort of a nice light movie and a nice, satisfying light ending.
Yeah, it's great. They're doing like a drive-in movie with a laptop.
Yeah, and like
and they're all shrunk, and you don't realize they're shrunk. It's really nice. It's a very nice family warm kind of movie. Like there's some tension and some stress.
Yeah,
but it's all manageable, man. Uh-huh. Everything's all good. No one's ever like that in peril, really. You know.
So how many thumbs are we gonna give this out of what are we going with, five?
We got five thumbs. Yeah.
You know, in the Marvel universe, I'm gonna give this a solid. Four thumbs.
Yeah, it's a good four thumber. The thing that I liked about it is this, it's not challenging. It's nice and it also is visually stimulating and all the psychedelic quantum realm stuff is right up my alley.
Oh yeah.
And there's lots of good action and the writing
and the jokes.
Is super
it's
snappy. It's just it moves and I saw it with my kid and we both left feeling good.
That's great. That's what a movie should do in the summertime. And then, you know, we should mention briefly, and this is a super spoiler. The end credit sequence, or even more notably, the mid credit sequence.
Yeah.
He's in the quantum realm, comes back, and there are three piles of ash. So obviously, this is a tie into Avengers, Infinity War, and the Wasp, part one and two. Well, the whole family basically is gone.
Mm hmm. Yeah, bummer.
And Paul Rudd survives.
Bummer. I'm really glad I didn't stick around for that mid-credit sequence. I was really riding high.
Oh, did you leave?
I did leave.
I thought you stuck around for all that stuff.
Nah, it depends, man. It's only if it's Harry Potter related. Yes. But no, I was with my kid, and like we were hungry and stuff. And I always space on those credit sequences. But I actually literally just read today that it was a pretty cool one, and that it did tie in. But that's kind of a bummer, though. It's like I was feeling good at the end of that movie. I don't want to be bummed out by that shit.
Yeah, but you know, it's none of that's gonna stick anyway.
Well, I know, but it's still. It makes me think of poor little Peter Parker saying, oh, I don't feel so good.
I still can't take that. My Lord. All right. So that's it. I think I think 8 thumbs total.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost a complete human.
I know it. What if we only had thumbs? You ever think about that? That'd be crazy.
Well, that's what the movie would be called, All Thumbs.
Yeah, it's true.
Right there. All right, thanks everyone for tuning in, and I'm going to see if I can watch another couple of these movies that Noel has seen lately, and we'll do a couple of more Crush to Judgments in the coming weeks. But thanks for tuning in, and go check out Ant-Man and the Wasp. Great movie.
Yeah, good time at the movie. Good time at the cinema.